Mr. Batterson, Real Six. We were talking about the raid on Saint-Nazaire on the 27th of March 1942. Now, you were approaching the old mole.
Yes.
Had you come under fire, or was it mainly concentrated on the boats in front of you until you got very close to it?
We were coming under fire all the time, but there were that many boats to shoot at. The Germans would be picking easy targets off, and also if they'd already got one and set it on fire, they'd start on another. We had some damage in Saint-Nazaire, but not as bad as...
As you got near the old mole, why in your book it seems to say that you were getting quite a bit of fire from the pillbox on the mole, and that combined with the burning sea meant you couldn't land. Can you tell me about that a bit?
Yeah. Well, I know, as we were swinging around near the old mole, I managed to get some of my shell fire through the slits in the gun mounting that was on the shell. It was a concrete gun mounting that the Germans were in, and managed to get some of the Erlikon shells through the slit in the, because we were quite close up to them, and see, that ceased fire for a bit after I'd got one or two of these shells through the slot, and managed to quieten them down a bit, but it wasn't long before they started again, and especially as we retreated.
Now, who made the decision that you weren't going to land on the old mole?
The skipper. He said to the commandos, because there wouldn't be a lot of time for conversation, general conversation, but he let it be known to them that he couldn't land on the old mole without putting everybody at risk for getting set on fire and sunk just like the other boats were.
So what happened then?
I don't know if it was while we was in the harbour or just on the way out, but the forward gun got put out of action by the Germans, although it didn't injure the other gunner.
Garner.
It didn't injure him, but the Lieutenant Phillips, Dark, he was wounded. Tommy Durant was wounded, and either one or two of the other commandos were wounded, but nothing serious.
So light wounds?
No, yes, and they both, either two or four, I know two for certain, but possibly four were wounded in Saint-Nazaire itself.
Now, you went from the old mole, you seem to have gone into Normandy Dock and fired on a German defence boat. Can you tell me that?
Wasn't in Normandy Dock, no. The old mole was quite close to the Normandy Dock, but it was a defence boat that was anchored in the harbour itself as a defence gun, and everybody has passed on the way up to Saint-Nazaire and also coming out. They all let fire at him because he was there firing it to us.
How big was it? What sort of a boat?
It's hard to say. I should think there'd be something like... It was two or three times bigger than a motor launch. And it had some quite good guns on it that was there for it. It was a defensive ship.
Did it come into action, or was it just being...
It was firing all the time, well, and until it had that many shells in it that I think it must have quietened it off a bit, and it wasn't as effective as what it would have been.
So then what? Were you under heavy fire during that bit? Your boat? Did your boat come under more fire then? Or?
Not more, but just more or less... While we were in Saint-Nazaire itself, he was under heavy fire all the time. And there was no no let up until you was on your way out, and even then there wasn't a let up. When we were on our way out, our motor mechanic managed to fix the smoke screen up, which helped some of the other boats to get out. Must have escaped under our cover of the smoke screen.
Where was the smoke machine?
On the stern of the ship.
So near you?
Yeah, further...
A bit further back from you?
Yeah. I've got some photographs here. I'll find them out before you go. You'll see. It's quite a complicated job. It isn't just a matter of switching a switch over and then smoke coming out. There's cylinders to work it. And it took a bit of fiddling about with. And of course the motor mechanic knew what he was doing and he fixed it up. Well, you see, a lot of things like that, there was that much going off that you couldn't really see what was happening. Yeah.
But he managed to lay his. Were some of the other boats laying smoke screens as well?
Some of the boats
were. Were some of the other boats laying smoke screens as well, or was yours?
Well, this is the point. We didn't have time to see. Most of the boats were sunk in the harbour. As I say, the motor mechanic, he was a very good chap. He was a Londoner, and only small, but he knew his job as regards the boat. And when we were on our way pulling out, the Germans were still firing at us, and the skipper would go at full speed and then suddenly slow down and stop, because as soon as the Germans got a line of fire on us, if we'd have kept going at the same speed, it could have just closed up and sunk us altogether. But the skipper, very good seaman, knew what he was doing, and he'd slow us down to a stop nearly, and as soon as the Germans either firing at front or behind us, and we just managed to miss them all the way. After the damage that was done, it was done in centre there, and the coastal guns of the Germans, I don't think they did any damage to us on the way out because of our skipper being able to manipulate with the boat as well as he could. And the prompt actions of the mechanics on the stokers and the motor mechanic on the boat. And that was one of the reasons we got away from Centre's Air. We travelled as far as we could during the night, and it was still very early next morning, and we were still at a rendezvous point. We didn't know where it was, the skipper knew, and we were supposed to meet up with either Tynesdale or the Atherston that was going to help us to get away. And we were hanging about at this point, and it was still dark, waiting for one or the other of the escort vessels to come and collect us up and take us away, kind of business. And while we were there waiting, we saw these outlines of destroyers, and we didn't know if they were ours or who's, or the skipper said, he stopped engines, he said, everybody keep quiet, because we don't know who these are. And there was either four. Personally, I think there was only four, but this case is either four or five. We can't really tell. and there were actually German destroyers out, come out of centre there around that area looking for us or anybody that had been involved in the raid. And we thought they was all going past, and at least three of them went by, and they were just far enough away for us not to be seen. Oh, we thought so. And these three went away, and then there was another one following up behind, and we thought he's going to go as well, but just as he'd got more or less out of distance, he must have spotted something. And in the accounts of the Germans after the war, the skipper, Captain Paul, the skipper of the German Jaguar, said that he thought he saw his shadow and he's going to back to investigate. And he turned around and came back straight towards us, switched the searchlights on, and opened fire straight away. And of course, we had to go back at him. As soon as we could see we were going to be fired on, we weren't going to sit there and let him knock us out of the water without any effort.
Did they originally try and get you to surrender without firing, or did they just fire at you straight away?
They fired at us straight away, and then after a good few rounds of fire, because they got all kinds of guns, and they got some 4-inch guns, I believe, on the destroyer.
What effect did that fire have, the first burst of fire?
It was, it woke us up to the fact that we'd been on our feet for quite a good number of hours, over 36 hours, and it woke us up to the fact that we were back in action again against the Germans. And he thought we were going to surrender after that first burst.
Did you open fire in that?
Yes, I
was. What did you aim at on the destroyer?
as it's coming towards you and going away, and you know, going all, well, you fired it. Mostly you tried to fire at the bridge where all the action was, because it's no good trying to fire the sides of the ship with a Oerlikon shell to do some damage, but it wasn't the kind of thing that would put a destroyer out of action unless you hit some vital parts.
Now, did you have many casualties in that first burst of fire?
Couldn't tell. I was busy. With Garner's gun being out of action, he was in there helping me with my gun.
Was Landy still spotting for you?
And Landy, he was there, but I can't remember. Everything was that quick. Can't remember if he was actually in the cockpit or not. In the gun, the round, I've just said it's a cockpit, it was a gun mounting that was in what we call a bandstand, because it was circular and it had steps up and down so that you could either run up and down it while you were fastened to the gun and elevate and depress the gun. And yes, Landy was there because he was helping to reload the gun. We'd already coming out of centre there. We'd filled as many of the magazines as we could that was used up in centres there to get them all fully replenished. And he was helping to load the gun as we were firing off them. And Garner got it and he went down, but I didn't have much chance to sit and look what had happened to him. I didn't even know how badly he'd been hit or anything. He just more or less vanished from out of sight at the side of me.
That was in the first burst of fire?
No.
That's the second, right. Who refused to surrender? That'd be the skipper, wouldn't it? Was it Henderson?
Well, all of us. When they shouted, when he thought we'd had enough, and he came over and said, surrender, like, and in the meantime, with every gun that we'd got, the commandos and everything else was firing back at them. But with the severity of the fire from the German destroyer, it was putting people out of action and people getting killed second by second, not minute by minute. People were getting mown down because they were that close. They was within shouting distance, and if you're within shouting distance and you can fire at somebody with an Ehrlichan gun, which they'd got similar guns to the Ehrlichan, if they weren't the Ehrlichan, that they could fire at you, you knew you were in trouble. And quite a number of the commandos had got killed. The one or two in our wheelhouse had got killed. And Tommy Durant I can't remember what kind of gun he'd got. His own gun anyway. And when our man on the twin Lewis gun got knocked out of action and fell away from the gun, Tommy Durant shouted for some of the lads to get some more magazines and come and load him up on the Lewis gun. And he was having a right go at him all the time.
Had he been wounded again, or was he still just got the slight wound?
This is early on, he just got a slight wound. And then, as things got more hectic and people were getting killed off left, right and centre, there was only odd guns working. My gun got put out of action, the Ehrlichan, and...
Now, first, you were hit by a phosphorus bullet, weren't you? Tell us about that.
I'd got the duffel coat on, which is a nice woolly coat, if you've ever seen one. One of these seamen's coats that you had at sea. And the shell... When you got your hands on the Ehrlichan, when you're firing it, you got both hands out like that. And your trigger was in your right hand side. And this shell that knocked, that came through my
armpit.
And the motor mechanic, the stoker, Richie, he was my loading number. As when he went into Stoker's room, if there were any action stations, he was always helping me on the gun. And he could see I was all glowing all over. And another shell came and knocked my magazine off the Ehrlichan. It knocked that to smithereens, and so that put my gun out of action.
Was that before or after they rammed you? Because the Jaguar rammed you, didn't it?
Yeah.
Was it before or after, or are you not sure now?
No, I'm definitely not sure, because things were going off all the time, and you couldn't put things in a specific time.
This thing hit you. What had hit your Ehrlichan?
I should say it was one of the German Ehrlichan shells, but this is open to doubt, and it's never been questioned. We found out after that Paul was trying to capture our boat in any case, and with us being such a small boat, he thought it would be easy. And when he found out it wasn't, well, that's when he tried to ram us.
Now, what do you remember of that? Did you see it coming?
Yes, and as it was getting close, either a skipper or somebody else on board shouted, "He's trying to ram us." And the skipper gave orders for the wheel to be swung over, and we swung, and he just caught us. Instead of hitting us full on midship, he just caught us a glancing blow and knocked so many of our crew overboard.
Was it still a big impact?
Yeah, fairly big, yeah. It must have been to knock people overboard like it did.
And what happened to you? Were you still on the gun? That would place where the... What, whether the gun was out of action then or not.
I was still in the gun pit when in the gun mounting when the
when it
hit us, but it knocked one of our stokers, Butcher, knocked him overboard, knocked Adam Ritchie, and we found out later that Ritchie would got knocked overboard and had his toes taken off by the propeller of either our boat or the German boat. And I never saw him again after that day, but I believe he was injured and taken ashore. And as I say, I never saw him again, so I don't know what happened to him. But as well as Butcher, the stoker, and Ritchie, the... sorry, I'm getting mixed up.
All right.
Butcher, the stoker, and Rees, I'm sorry, it was Rees, not Ritchie. Rees was the ASDICS operator that had his toes taken off. There was the other lieutenant of the commandos.
The one whose name we didn't remember, yeah.
It was a foreign name, Vandenberg or something, but I'll give you that name because it's in this book. It's just a matter of finding which page it's on. He was knocked overboard and never seen again because he couldn't swim. And with all the equipment he'd got on as well, it had weighed him down, and he could have been injured as he got knocked overboard. In any case, we don't know, but we never saw him again. And there were two or three more of the people got knocked over. We managed to get Butcher back on board, and that when the Germans had finished firing. But the motor mechanic, was being told to stop and start from the bridge. The skipper was giving his orders out. Just left one of them in the stoke room, and the motor mechanic came dashing up out of the engine room to see what was going off, because I mean everything was haywire. And as soon as he got up on deck, he got covered in machine gun fire. And it didn't quite kill him, but he was very severely wounded. And he died later on when the Campbelltown blew up.
We'll come to that. Yeah. So, were the Germans, after they'd rammed you, did they carry on firing at you?
Yeah, they went round again and had another bash, and
things must have been pretty desperate state. Were you holed? Was the hull holed by the ramming? Were you sinking?
No, we weren't sinking.
So it hadn't sort of crashed in the side?
Caught the top half of the boat near the deck, and it had damaged that as well, but...
So you were still under fire, and could you? Well, you're not sure whether your Oerlikon was working or not there.
It wasn't, no.
It wasn't. Now, there's one story that I did want to get, was where you thought your hair had gone white. That's a great story. Well, can you tell us that?
After we'd jumped out of the bandstand, when we knew the gun was no more, we were no good trying to get that firing again, me and Adam Ritchie were sheltering behind the bandstand, which had mats on the sides of it, tied round the side, shell splinter-proof mats, and there was that much gunfire going off, things were getting blown apart all over, and there was a bit of a ceasefire in the firing, and I put my hand up to my head like that. My tin hat had already been knocked off while I was in the bandstand, while I was in centre there. But I put my hand up and come away with all this white stuff. And I could see it was white, but it was a bit too coarse for my hair, actually, although my hair was pretty thick and that. And I thought, oh, I've gone white with the shock of the action. And then on better examination, I found out that it was where shells had gone through the bandstand protection mats and splinter mats and thrown this stuff all over my head and that. And that's why I thought I'd gone white. And it's enough to give anybody a shock to make your hair go white. That was, although my hair did survive, and I kept my black hair for a hell of a long time. In fact, I've still got a bit left.
Now, what about other people? Were you aware of who was and wasn't been wounded again? Because Durant was wounded again at some point, wasn't it?
Well, this is after Swain had no more guns to fire. The commandos were mostly dead or wounded, or no guns to fire back at them. And he came round again and said, surrender, like.
Now, who made that decision? Was that Swain?
Swain said.
Why not? Was it Henderson? Oh, sorry.
Henderson had already been killed.
When had he been killed?
During the action of the German destroyer coming round us. And I remember seeing him when I went round to the wheelhouse. It was just against the bridge, and he'd had his leg blown off completely. The other leg seemed to be all right, but this was blown, and you could see guiders. You know your guiders? You could see them hanging down from his kneecap when his leg had gone completely.
Left but, leg.
And
so he wasn't there, and that's why Swain...
He'd be near enough dead then. And the Philip Dark had been knocked out by the... He was unconscious, laid down at the side of the skipper. The sergeant... That was his name. It wasn't to rank.
The coxswain was called coxswain, Sergeant, yeah.
And he'd already been killed. He'd been down in the wheelhouse, and he must have got injured on the wheel and staggered back up a couple of steps up onto the... And it was in the bridge area. He'd been killed. The... Able seaman that took over as coxswain when sergeant wasn't available, he took over the wheel, and he was injured in the legs and all over the place. I never saw him again actually after the action, and his name was Sparks, and they were dead and wounded all over the ship.
So that's when and then Swain decided to surrender.
He said...
How did he do it? What happened exactly?
Well, as near as I can remember, when the German shouted, he could speak good English, could Captain Paul, but he also had some men on board that could speak good English as well. And he said, surrender now, and so... I can't remember the words, but he must have said, we can't carry on anymore, we're more or less surrender. So the German said, well, no tricks now, no messing about, and so we more or less surrendered.
Did you realise the Germans were being quite good there, because they could have just finished you up.
They could have blown us out of the water. They could have blown us out of the water right from the start.
With a 4-inch?
With whatever they got on board, yeah.
Were you aware of any bigger guns? Because I'd have thought a 4-inch shell would have sunk a motor launch.
They would have done.
Did they fire them at you?
This is something that's been in contention. We don't know if they fired them, but they had some... Apart from Ehrlichans, they had some other guns that they did fire at us, bigger than Ehrlichans. But also, their armaments, they might have as many as half a dozen Ehrlichans, we don't know. But the machine guns, heavy and light, and over 90 in the crew fighting against a boat full of commandos and navy, which only added up to about